everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Bill and Tom wishing you well as we launch into the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. It's February the 9th, 2022, in our 12th year on the radio. Tom, it was 58 years ago tonight that the first live American TV appearance of the Beatles was on the Ed Sullivan Show. And, you know, I was watching, of course. You probably were, too.
I was.
I thought they only did one song. I looked it up, and they actually did five songs. It's funny, the only one I remember was I Want to Hold Your Hand, but that was actually the last song they did.
Did they do Love, Love Me Do?
They did All My Lovin'. That's what they launched in the first half before the commercial break. Then there were actually three songs before the commercial break. Till There Was You and She Loves You. Those were the first three. Then coming out of the break, I saw her standing there, and then they wrapped it up with I Want to Hold Your Hand. You know, I was reflecting. I was lucky enough to see the Beatles August 20th at Comiskey Park in Chicago.
Interesting thing about that that just struck me?
What was that?
When you think about the Beatles, you think about all of the original music, the great original stuff they did.
Oh, yeah.
All of the songs they did on the Ed Sullivan Show were covers of current hits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I was just going to say that I saw them in 1965 on August 20th, and the only song I remember, Tom, was the opening song, She Loves You, and the only, by the time you heard the opening line, She Loves You, they were completely drowned out, and it was almost that way, I think, for pretty much the whole concert. I don't even remember any of the other songs other than the launch of She Loves You. Anyway, let's go to the live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are, by the way, in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman Ward 2, Democrat, with us on the live line. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. My mom has told me many times about the Beatles appearing on Ed Sullivan, and her favorite song was She Loves You, and then the other song she liked was Norwegian Wood.
Oh, I love that song. Yeah.
And so, you know, so I grew up on listening to the Beatles with my parents' interest in them, but even after with Paul McCartney, you know, while I was in my formative years, Paul McCartney had a few hits, a couple with Michael Jackson, and you got to appreciate it both. And also, I remember at six years old, what a profound effect the announcement of John Lennon's assassination had on my parents.
So. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I can remember that evening so well, 58 years ago. Boy. Anyway, Paul, I see the city of Tucson is considering if you want to hop on the bus, it's free and it may stay that way. Is it possible to do that fare-free transit in our city?
I don't think it's possible to do that forever.
Okay.
But I think it's possible. We can do it for a little bit longer. We've got some federal money. I mean, there's a bunch of different pieces to it, a lot of moving parts. Ultimately, at some point, we're going to have fares. I mean, it's a bummer, but it just, unfortunately, there's some nuances to that on how you value something and whether something has a value. And we have situations where here's the bottom line. In an ideal situation, anybody who needs a ride somewhere that's important should be able to get a ride. The problem is that, so, you know, having a free bus for folks, or having emergency vouchers or free passes that we circulate to nonprofits absolutely makes sense, and I would do that. The problem is that we have situations where we've got folks that are using the bus not necessarily for transportation and taking advantage of what I deem to be a pretty favorable situation. And that's the issue we need to address. And this involves driver safety, respect for the bus, the actual rolling stock, where we've got some vandalism and some damage being done. And so that's the thing we try to control. And so whether or not fares is the answer to that is another conversation, but it's a conversation worth having. And so I think we'll be able to come up with a package that works out for all these stakeholders and the people involved. But it, ultimately for now, for the next 6 months anyway, and maybe even longer than that, we don't need to raise, we're not going to need to reinstitute fares right away.
Whatever happened to those jump on your little scooters? Are they still around?
They're around. I mean, they're a little. I think COVID kind of made them very underutilized and what have you. But they're around. They're an option for folks that again are, I guess the best word to say is like transportation challenged, and they need to get somewhere quick. They're definitely a viable option for certain folks, especially people who don't own vehicles. And so that's kind of the piece that I'd have there. And they are available, but again, with the geofence set up around the U of A, they're probably not used as much. And we'll see if that status quo changes. I think we were really responsible in Tucson in that we controlled the number that were put out. And by doing that, they didn't become a nuisance. They didn't become a clutter. We didn't have those issues with them, I think. And so that's one thing that I remember being in San Diego when those things were first the rage. This is pre-COVID and 15, 16, 17, right in there. One summer I was in San Diego. They were everywhere. They were crowding up the Mission Beach walkway. And the city council was having a bunch of things. I think I actually went on television in San Diego to talk about, like, wow, I hope that, you know, if they come to our city, we're ready for it. So I remember those discussions. And I think we did a good job in controlling the number that could be circulated. And as a result, we didn't generate as many complaints.
How about accidents with those little scooters?
I don't have those statistics on me. I'm sure there's been a few. I'm not sure if there's been any fatalities. I can definitely make an inquiry to the police department, traffic division, and try to find out. Obviously, they're not perfect. They're not. Look, we have accident fatalities of all different types. I'd be surprised if we didn't have one involving a scooter. But I'll find out what those numbers are, like how many rides we provided and how many scooter accidents there were, etc.
There was an economic development discussion at the meeting last night. Is that correct?
Yes. We had a consultant come in and introduce their plan, and they're going to promote some sectors and try to build some surplus jobs for us. Again, I think the nuts and bolts pieces to these packages are by the individual deal. I think that lots of different cities have marketing packages. We do have some things that cities don't have to offer, including favorable climate, favorable location, as far as international trade. Those are things that we just have that are natural fits for us. I also think that the centralized distribution of goods and services is going to change. It basically, for a 50-year period, it was ship things made from far away, whether it was in Asia or whether it was in Europe or whether it was in South America, Central America, ship them from far away and then distribute them. I think with COVID and all the things that have happened globally in the last 2 years, there's some opportunity for some homegrown manufacturing, more organic foods, locally grown foods, things where you're not just buying things in bulk from, say, China or from the Midwest and food or whatever it is, and then distributing. I think you'll see a lot more like local distribution of locally produced goods and services. I think that'll be an interesting shift. That won't just happen here in Tucson, but it'll happen globally. So I'm looking forward to kind of some of these changes. We talked last time about how the labor market and how the labor market is managed is going to shift. And so I think those things are what's in store for us as we finish the 20s and go into the 30s. Over the next 20 years. And that'll be a really interesting piece. But for right now, the nuts and bolts pieces of economic development to bring surplus jobs are way more important. And if a lot of it is you need to get that pebble to go down the hill and build some momentum. So if we can get one telecom or we can get a couple of extra aerospaces. I think aerospace is where we really have a niche opportunity, and if we can get those aerospace niches and get one or two in that sector, I think that sector will build nice, will be built rather nicely in Tucson and give us a considerable amount of surplus jobs and surplus employment.
If you were with me right now, we were up at Mona's Danish Bakery, Paul Cunningham, what are you in the mood for right now over the noon hour?
Oh, I don't know. Probably the cheesecake blintz or one of the, I mean, they've got so much stuff.
But. I'd go with a quiche myself, would be really tasty.
That would hit the spot at lunch.
Yeah, either in the spinach feta or the ham and cheese quiche. Both would be a really, really good choice. Paul, stick on the line. We'll talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast, Tuesday through Sunday. And yes, people are there, and they are waiting for the doors to open. They want their Danish, they want their coffee, they want their Danish Kringle. And if you're doing a Kringle for Valentine's Day, Steve and the team are going to do a heart-shaped Kringle. In fact, they're doing it right now. You can have almond, raspberry, multiberry, several different pastes in your Danish Kringle. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, with us on the live line. Be right back with Paul. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now to the offices of Tucson City Councilman Ward 2, Councilman Democrat Paul Cunningham. Paul, at that meeting last night talking about economic development, was there a report on how things are looking with tourism and the gem show that's now underway?
They briefly touched on it, and obviously everything's up from the prior year because we didn't have anything. I don't think we've returned to the 2019 numbers yet, but we'll see when the numbers come out later next month. You can't really tally everything up until everything's kind of done. So we'll see where we were. I think we had a very positive gem show, and I think what we're doing in the gem and mineral sector in Tucson is unbelievable. Obviously, hopefully people will check out the new museum we have. We also, in the old chamber building downtown, a couple guys have built a incredible facility to not only distribute and manage gem shows around the world, but to distribute and sell gems and minerals year-round here in Tucson. And I got the opportunity to meet two of them this weekend, and they say that Tucson's on its way to being one of the gem and mineral capitals of the world. And I think we can get there, and that'll be a really great sector for us to open up.
Is that the old chamber building over there?
Yep, it sure is. I implore people to check it out. They've got some rhodocite. They've got some crystal quartz. I mean, the stuff they have on display is just unbelievable, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Hey, is the heat off a little bit on this debate over the regional transportation?
Well, you know, as I said from the beginning, we got to have a deal that works for Tucson, and we do. We have a great plan from Ted Maxwell, who kind of brought everybody together. He listened. Look, the guy was an Air Force general. I mean, he knows how to be a leader, and he understood we've got to get the right people to the table. He communicated everything, and he kind of brokered this common ground path towards a really healthy RTA and City of Tucson and rest of the region partnership that I think will pay dividends if we can get it passed in 5 years.
Yeah, Ted will be my guest tomorrow, General Maxwell. He'll explain to our listeners in detail how that whole thing was brokered. So do you think it can be sold to the voters in 3 years or 3 or 4 years?
I have faith that the voters are going to want what's best for the region. And so, you know, that's not... Can it be sold to the voters? Anything that's good policy can be sold to the voters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's
yeah.
the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do things like we soil it up by making sure too many special interests are involved, or we soil it up by leaving someone out and it leaves them an opening to organize some heavy opposition against it, then it obviously has a little bit more trouble passing. But I think this package is going to be comprehensive. It's going to be inclusionary. It's going to make sense and augment some of the things we're already doing. I think we'll see some augmentation to mass transit, whether it's extending the streetcar or some type of track out to the airport and the casino, and maybe even some utilizing the existing infrastructure so that you can get from downtown to Keno Stadium and back easily, and kind of merging those two areas of commerce. So that would be some cool things we can do. Then on the transportation side, I've advocated consistently that I want to have some money set aside to maintain the arterials that the RTA built on the east side in the first RTA, but also to contribute into some funding for what would quote-unquote the crosstown freeway, but it won't. It'll be a parkway, but it will allow us to travel from, say, Kolb and Golf Links, from what is now Kolb and Golf Links, all the way to I-10 and downtown without encountering a stoplight, kind of unencumbered. And I think that will bridge the east side and downtown, and I think that'll be beneficial to Tucson and the region.
One thing we have not touched on, do you see many people still wearing masks around town?
I did. For as Omicron was going on, I saw more and more N95s and people wearing masks. And then obviously over the past, like, say, 5 days, it's definitely started to whittle. Look, Omicron is something that shouldn't be underestimated. I mean, don't take it not seriously, because obviously it can still do some of the damage that COVID does, but it appears the perception, whether it's warranted or not, the perception is that Omicron poses a much lower threat to folks who've either been vaccinated or have already had COVID or have antibodies for whatever reason. And the worst you're going to get is a really cruddy cold, as a certain local former Surgeon General of the United States told me. I will, you know. But he said, yeah, you know, he told me that. It seems that way. He wasn't sure. He didn't have data. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He said, you know, preliminary, that was kind of what he told me when I was talking to him. I just ran into him at a public event, and he said, you know, it right now it looks like if you're vaccinated and or you've had COVID before, you're probably going to get some type of, and you can track the Omicron. It may not be much worse than a really, really, really bad cold, but we don't know yet. The other thing he said, though, about Omicron was that it was very, very virulent, very, very its transmissibility was higher than any of the other variants. But I think, again, as we've gotten that, because of that high transmissibility, we have a whole bunch of people right now who have either had Omicron, have vaccinated, or both, and all of a sudden we watch that needle just take a nosedive. And when that happens and it gets low and we're in that situation where we have no deaths every day or one death per day, people, as we did last summer and in the summer of 21, people kind of laid back a little bit. Now, if it props up again and we start getting, you know, 50, 60, 70 deaths a day again, people are going to behave differently. So I think that's where we live. And that's just the truth. That's where we live right now. Hopefully, with the infrastructure we have in place, with the proper counteractive medicines that have been developed, and the ability to develop the new vaccines in 100 days that we've developed, that technology over this first 2 years of the pandemic, hopefully we can see some semblance of normal in the next few months. I'm hoping for that. I think all of us could use it, not just from an economic standpoint, but from a mental health standpoint. So, you know, that's where it is. That's a very long answer to a mask question, but
I'm telling you, 2 years into this thing, you brought up mental health. People are really, they really do want to move on, and I know you and I do, and everybody does.
Well, it's not easy, and I've got a 5-year-old who's never been to school without wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And, I don't really know if I want him to live like that. So I think that's kind of where I'm at, and hopefully that things may change. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting. My eye has been on South Africa most of this time to see kind of where they're living and how they're living. And I think we're still about 2-3 weeks away from the remnants of what Omicron did to South Africa. And that's kind of a template of what happens next. We're about 3 or 4 weeks behind them. Yeah. So if South Africa's below 1 or 2 deaths a day, in 2 or 3 weeks, then in about 6 weeks, Pima County should be at zero, or Arizona should be at, you know, 1 or 2 deaths a day or less. And when you're at that low and you don't have an elevated hospital population and your kind of business as usual in the medical field, you're just less stressed out and there's less things. I don't need to go. If I compound fracture my leg or get in a car accident, I know there's a bed space for me and I can be taken care of and I'm not risking being infected by something that could kill me. So I think those are some of the things that are out there, knowing that there's layers of protection and, you know, we've got to get there. But truth be told, man, our community, I'm real proud of how we stacked up against Omicron and all the variants and COVID over the last 2 years. You know, I'd love to be able to stand up and go, oh, yeah, because of us, we had minimal loss of life. Nobody knows that. But I do know that there were a lot of amazing heroes in Tucson in this last 2 years who've put themselves at risk and put themselves through things to make our community better and keep our community safer, and I'm proud of that.
All right. Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman. Thank you, Paul, and we'll find out more about the very latest with Omicron and COVID with Will Humble, who is waiting in the wings, former Arizona State Health Director. He'll give us an update after the break. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great week.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. It's the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. Will Humble is next on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Do you believe it? Valentine's Day is Monday. That means this weekend would be a perfect time to pick up a beautiful plant, a rose plant, anything for your sweetheart. Over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. I'm sure you will find something very tempting on their 13-acre site that your special loved one would feel really great about receiving. And, you know, it could also be a beautiful Talavera pot at Zocalo Village, which is right there on site, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They are open every day. Green Things, they are in their 51st year. And here on the Buckmaster Show, we are in year 12 of the radio project, 34th year here on TV and radio in this particular market. Let's go now on the live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our friend Will Humble. He is the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's the Buckmaster Contributor on Public Health. He is also the former Director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Will, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Nice to hear from you again, and thanks for the invitation.
Will, we were just having, and I think you probably heard a little bit of the conversation when you called in. We were wrapping up our conversation with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, and we were talking about COVID fatigue. Here we are 2 years into this, and so many people, Will, are done with it. And we're seeing now some of the states, some of the big states, they would be traditionally thought of as blue states, saying we're going to be ending the mask mandates. Are we at a turning point with this deal, Will?
Yeah, I think so. And it, well, of course, I mean, it does vary from state to state. Take, for example, the Eastern Seaboard. Remember New York, New Jersey, that area. Just like with the original ancestral strain, they got hit first. Same thing with Omicron. They had the initial first wave of Omicron in New York and New Jersey in that area about 2 to 3 weeks ahead of Arizona. We're definitely down on the downswing in terms of new cases per day in Arizona, and in 2 or 3 weeks from now it's going to be even better. So some of those states are further along than we are in terms of the decrease in the number of new cases per week. Now, as your previous guest talked about, we still are having, you know, a lot of people in the hospital with COVID. In fact, about 40% of everybody in the hospital right now is there for COVID-19. So that will continue to be a problem within the hospitals. But in terms of new cases, I think we're definitely on the downswing. And so, you know, I'm not going to second guess, governors and other, public officials in other states that have been doing the right thing by having mask requirements in place, and now they've decided to drop some of those requirements. Even if I did disagree with what they're doing right now, I still want to give them kudos, because at least they did the right thing, unlike, the elected and appointed officials for the most part at the state level here.
Yeah, the national media keeps turning to this guy, Dr. Michael Osterholm. I know we've talked about him in the past. He's in your business, Will. He's up at the university. He's University of Minnesota. He is in the public health field, and the media turns to him. They always get kind of a sexy quote out of him. He said that Omicron, that there would be a blizzard of Omicron in this country. His newest quote is that the new variant will be a, quote, 210-mile-an-hour curveball. Well, I looked at the number of cases, Will Humble, of the BA2 variant. It's less than 500 cases in the United States.
Well, So this is going to be a long answer. I'll try to be
brief. Go ahead.
Starting on the last part of it, look, here's the way you can tell whether a new variant is going to take over is what, like, start looking at the breakdown in new cases and see how quickly this any new variant takes over. And just go back to how, you know, it took Delta about 3 months to displace Alpha. It took Omicron about 3 weeks to displace Delta. I mean, Omicron was incredibly contagious, and it took over right away. And that's the only way a new, well, there's a couple ways, but the main way a new variant is going to take over is to be more contagious, either that or evade immunity. There's no evidence that the BA2 virus evades immunity, and there's no evidence that it's overtaking the BA1 strain, the original Omicron. And so my issue with Dr. Osterholm is that he often is given to grandiose statements that he cannot support with data. And because there are certain elements of the media that like the kinds of sound bites that he provides, they keep going back. But it's, in my opinion, it's a disservice to the profession of public health. It hurts the reputation of public health when you have practitioners like him making grand statements that have sexy and attractive sound bites but aren't based in any kind of factual information, because it ruins isn't the right word, but it degrades the reputation of public health as a whole when you have persons like Dr. Osterholm who go unchallenged by mm-hmm. his peers. And mm-hmm. I'm one of the peers that's saying, dude, tone it down. It's not all about you. It's about the response. It's about getting the truth to the public. It's not about getting more hits, you know, on the television and radio and in print.
Yeah, he still is the one that a lot of the national media goes to. You know, despite people wanting this thing to be over, we have hit a new grim milestone. More than 900,000 people across America have died from COVID-19. There is a University of Southern California professor of psychology. Her name is Gail Sinatra, and she says, the research shows that we as human beings, Will Humble, have a human tendency to turn away from mass suffering as a form of self-preservation. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but all of us see that on a daily basis in our actual lives. I mean, think about how you react when you, for example, drive through the part of Tucson where there's a lot of folks that are homeless,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that psychologist might be onto something, that because you drive into a situation like that, or someone comes up to a gas station asking for a couple of bucks. And so well, there's no way I can help this situation. There's no way I can solve this big problem. And so it is, as a matter of just protecting myself, I'm just going to pretend that I didn't see this. And I think she's onto something there.
Yeah. Well, people do want to make sure that they at this point, after 2 years, they really do want to put this in the rearview mirror, and hopefully that will be the case pretty soon. But getting back to the masks, and there is still this controversy, when all is said and done, did the masking make a difference, Will?
So the masking made a difference in the states and counties and places that used that as a strategy to slow the spread. So take, for example, universal masking in the classroom. Even with the basic masks, the simple cloth or surgical masks for kids, if everyone in the classroom was masked, it reduced the chances of outbreaks and kids missing school by 350%. So if everyone in the classroom is masked, you reduce the number of particles that are in that classroom, you reduce the number of sick days for those kids, and you keep kids in the classroom. The same goes for other kinds of environments where adults go. If you have a universal masking requirement that's enforced and has good adherence, it drops the number of particles in the room, and it has a dramatic effect at slowing the spread of the virus in those closed indoor environments. And so masking works when it's applied universally and adhered to by virtually everybody in that closed indoor environment. Where the regular kind of masks fall down is when, let's say I wear a cloth mask into a closed indoor environment where no one else is wearing a mask. My mask is great at stopping particles from leaving my mouth, but it's not a great tool at preventing particles from coming back at me. And so wearing a mask, if you personally are wearing a mask in an environment where no one else is wearing a mask, then make sure you're wearing a good one, which is, they're called N95s or KN95s or KN94s. And those are the kinds of masks that if you wear them tight and clip it on the nose and make sure that it's tight, really does a good job at filtering the air just for you. So the effectiveness of masks has to do with what kind of mask it was and then what the adherence is in that environment with, in terms of, people actually wearing the mask.
Did you get your kits from the government? I know we got ours a couple of days ago, the testing kits.
Yeah, we ordered some from that came here with, and we got them within
10
days. Less than a week.
Yeah.
I went to the website and they were in the mailbox within days. So we got ours really fast. We had four of them. We got four. Haven't used them yet, but now we have them.
Yeah, and our friend Tom on the other side of the glass just put up a little news story that the FDA issued a recall for an at-home COVID test. This one is called Standard Q COVID-19 AG Home Test. This is not, I assume, the one that the government was using.
I'm not looking at the package, so
okay.
I can't tell. I think I would know if it was one that the federal government mailed out. There is something that viewers might be interested in. It's not so important here in the deserts, but that if you get your mailed-in container and it stays in your mailbox and gets frozen,
whoa,
which is what could happen in like Prescott or Flag,
yeah,
that can really affect its how well it works. So if you've got listeners up there in the mountains of, yeah, or Cochise County or whatever, and don't leave your tests in the mailbox overnight. If they freeze, it could be a problem.
Wow, never thought of that. Okay, well, stick around. We've got a couple more questions for you, including some interesting information that was in the Wall Street Journal about how does a pandemic end. We'll talk with Will Humble more after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico would be a great getaway if you're saying, you know, I've had it. I need to get away. Jump in the car, jump in the truck, take off 3 hours east of Tucson to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. You know, there's so much to do over there, hiking and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. And I don't know, 50s and 60s sounds really good to me for high temperatures to do some outdoor activities and hiking. So check it out. Where to stay, what to do, all that information that you will need on their website, Southwest New Mexico, just spell that out, .org. Let's continue now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's the former Director of the Arizona Department of Health. He is our contributor here on the Buckmaster Show on public health. And, Will, that was an interesting piece, an op-ed, opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal on Saturday under the title, How Does the Pandemic End? The piece was authored by John M. Barry, a distinguished scholar at Tulane University's School of Public Health. He's also the author of The Great Influenza, the story of the deadliest pandemic in history. I didn't realize, Will, that the deaths returned to pre-pandemic levels. It took 3 years until 1921 for the virus to mutate into an ordinary seasonal influenza. But as Mr. Barry points out, the world had long moved on before that. It kind of sounds like where we're at right now.
Well, yes and no. It's an interesting piece, by the way. I appreciate you forwarding that to me. But the big difference, there's a big difference between the influenza virus and this coronavirus that we've been dealing with for the last couple of years. Influenza viruses are subject to very large, what are called antigenic shifts, so that they can change their, the way they look to your immune system dramatically in a very short period of time. And that's very different from what we're seeing with the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19. What we see with our virus that we're experiencing now are very small incremental changes over time. So we had the ancestral strain, then later we had the California variant, then Alpha, Delta, we're dealing now with Omicron. Each of those were very minor tweaks in the genetic code that changed the protein coat of the SARS-CoV-2 virus just a little bit. And so I don't expect us to have major antigenic shifts that happen with this virus, but rather continued tweaking or small changes. And for that reason, I think I'm not saying we're out of the woods, but there's definitely light coming through the trees right now, because, and the reason is this, that, And by this point, virtually everyone has either been vaccinated or been infected with the virus. There's a few stragglers out there that never got the vaccine and haven't been infected yet. But by and large, everyone has either been infected or been vaccinated or both. And while there's evidence that's clear that antibody immunity has waned over time and become less specific to the Omicron variant, T-cell immunity, and I think we talked about this a couple of months ago, the T-cell immunity that our bodies develop, and that's the grunt work part of your immune system, the T-cell immunities have remained really robust all through all these different variants over the last 2 years. And so when you get either vaccinated or infected with this virus, your body builds antibodies, your immune system creates antibodies, but also T-cells. And while the antibodies do wane over time, T-cell immunity remains robust and strong. And so for that reason, what I expect to continue to happen increasingly over the rest of 2022 is, yes, we will continue to have infections. People will continue to get infected with this virus, but it will become less and less of public health or even clinical significance, because people have those T cells on board. And even though they may get an infection because their antibodies have waned, the T cell immunity remains. And that's why you see, that when people get reinfected or have a breakthrough case, it's generally very mild. And it will continue on that track, in my opinion. So I think we're very close to being out of the woods with this as a pandemic and as an epidemic. But it will always be with us, but it will just become less and less clinically and clinically significant and of public health significance.
You know, you said something very interesting, that at this point, after 2 years, if you've been here in Arizona, you've been exposed to this, and you probably have had it in some form. 40% of the people would not even have symptoms, so they wouldn't have known.
That's right. And if you do a sero survey, which the ASU Biodesign has done, that means you look at blood draws amongst folks. You see that, and they could tell the difference, by the way, when they look at that sero study, you could tell the difference between antibody immunity that's built by a vaccine and through an infection. They can tell the difference. And we're getting to the point, especially after this Omicron spike, that basically everyone's either been vaccinated or infected or both. And because T cell immunity remains strong, it's just going to become less and less of a health threat over time, but it will always be, a threat of infection.
All right, Will Humble, always a pleasure. Talk about you tweet quite a bit, and you talk your blog. How do people get to follow you?
Yeah. Go into your Google or your browser and punch in Arizona Public Health Association. I do a new blog post just about every day and have done that throughout the entire pandemic. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, just go to @WillHumble_AZ. And I try to be not so super provocative. I try to put out content that where people can, learn more. So my tweets toward it trigger people to learn more by going to a document that's peer-reviewed or that has interesting information.
And it's not just about COVID. There's stuff about marijuana and all, anything to do with public health, and very interesting stuff. Will, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
All right, Will Humble, a regular guest, a monthly guest here on the program in the public health arena. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, saying we hope you have a great, I almost said weekend. I'm pushing ahead. No, midweek day. Have a great day.
Each day, it's Bill Buckmaster at noon, followed by The Ramsey Show next on AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by the Exogen Temporal Scanner.
I'm Matt Piper in New York. Mask men.